Hi, I'm Jacqueline Musgrove, host of Scissortail Sessions. In addition to podcasting, I also am an abstract painter. Join me on Friday evening, February 5th, for Weston, Maine's Art in the Market, where my work will be showcased. Weston, Maine is located at 3 Northeast State Street, Suite 190 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. For more, visit the event page online, westinmaine.co. Hope to see you there. Welcome to Scissortail Sessions. My name is Jacqueline Musgrove.
And I'm Aaron Gibson.
Thanks for joining us as we share the threads that connect us all, simply being human. Okay, Aaron, before we start, we wanted to acknowledge our growing listener base across France and Germany. That's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, that's right. We do have a few listeners in Europe, and we're hoping that we can get a few maybe in Australia, especially after our interview today. So we're excited about that and would love to incorporate more listeners and guests from across the world.
This is episode 3, and in this episode we speak via Zoom with sideshow couple Frankie Sin and Donnie Vomit.
They have a unique story and an occupation and a lifestyle that's unfamiliar to most.
Yeah, they've actually performed on Coney Island in New York, Australia, New Orleans, and all across the country.
Their newest project is online through their YouTube channel, Follyland, and they were also online at strangeforhire.com.
Sit back, relax, enjoy Frankie Sin and Donnie Vomit. So I guess to kick it off, what would you guys consider your, I guess, occupation?
Well, we are entertainers first and foremost.
Okay.
We're show folk, sideshow performers, all around strange performers for hire is what we are.
You self-identify as... Uh-huh. What was that?
Professional oddballs.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Professional, you said professional oddballs or
professional oddballs. That's right. We do acts of the strange, the odd, the weird, the bizarre, the dangerous, the daring, the death-defying, and the deranged to amaze, amuse, confound, and confuse. Ooh, it's been a while since I've had to say that.
And we need something like that for the podcast,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I guess, how did you guys both, what was your journey to this occupation? What was the moment that sparked the intrigue?
The intrigue? Well, to say what the things that we do for a living is like, right now I'm a professional sword swallower, fire eater, Frankie's whip crackers. We do sideshow acts mainly,
right.
Walking on glass. Frankie climbs a ladder of machetes and we host sideshows coast to coast and around the world. My journey actually started all the way back. I was raised in Norman, Oklahoma. And out there, I joined the Renaissance fairs.
Yeah.
So I was doing Norman Medieval Fair. And through the Medieval Fair, my friends were all into like the jousting. And I was into the choreographed combat, doing the living chessboards. But the one thing I really liked is my friends like to dress up like the knights. I like to dress up like the jester. So I got into juggling. And juggling was the gateway drug into doing dangerous stunts for a living. So I went from learning how to juggle balls to juggle knives to juggling torches. Then in my teenage years, a friend of mine decided to start a sideshow after he saw Jim Rose, who was the premier sideshow performer in the 90s.
Okay. Jim Rose.
So my friend was like, we're going to start our own sideshow. Donnie, you know how to juggle fire. You need to learn how to eat fire. So I taught myself to eat fire as dangerously as possible. And it just kept going from there. From there, I went to start working for the sideshow that we had disbanded almost immediately. And I went solo in Norman, opening up for like punk bands and rock and roll bands under the name Donnie Vomit. So I was doing stuff like, that's when I was doing bed of nails and doing straight jacket escapes. and eventually moved to New York City and got a job at the sideshow in Coney Island, which is one of the last remaining sideshows. I was working there for like 6 years. I was hosting the show there, give or take, on and off. Eventually started touring around, hosting burlesque shows as the one guy in the show doing sideshow stunts. And that's when I met Frankie.
Nice.
Yeah. So we took our skills, we combined them, and we started touring solo, like all around the world.
That's awesome. So Frankie, would you say that your, I guess, original thing was burlesque performance?
Yeah, well, I've been kind of in like, the industry's a little funny because it all overlaps between like rockabilly culture and like the punk scene and sideshow and circus arts. So like I started in the pinup culture. Like there was a pinup revival in the early 2000s and I started modeling and then I started belly dancing and then I started taking my top off. I did burlesque.
Yeah.
And that's how I met Donnie and I fell in love the minute I saw him and I knew I was in trouble.
Now, did you guys meet while you were in New York then, or had you already come back here?
No, we were on the same tour before. Like okay. we our paths had crossed while I was touring and she was a local performer in LA to be a guest performer when our show came to town. And then she got picked up on the show and when we were touring full time, that kind of
that was it.
Sparked okay, cool. Me.
So she was living in LA. I was living in New York City. We weren't sure what to do at that point. We decided to be together. So we split the difference and moved down to New Orleans. And we lived down in New Orleans for about a year and a half performing down there. And that's a fun town.
Frankie, where are you originally from?
I'm from Los Angeles, born and bred California girl. And I lived there for like 30 years until I went on the road with Donnie. We moved to Brooklyn first together, then to New Orleans, then to Norman, and now we're in Oklahoma City.
I mean, as a child, really, the performing aspect intrigued you guys, and it just kind of, I guess, caught on fire from there, it sounds like.
I always wanted to run away with the circus.
Yeah, so we just kind of built our own circus to do it. I couldn't play instruments when I learned how to play trumpet a little bit, but I wasn't that good. I couldn't sing, but I kind of wanted to be like in a band and my desire for attention sideshow kind of like filled the void. And my fear of being injured or hurting myself was outweighed by my desire for attention and just managed to turn that into a profession. And you had to learn real quick that to how to present dangerous acts on stage where it can't just be shock value. You need humor, you need suspense, and you almost need like a story to pull off.
Make the audience feel safe while they're watching something kind of horrifying.
Oh yeah, you don't want to pretend anything goes wrong. You want to make sure your audience is happy and safe while they watch you do dangerous and stupid things.
So you mentioned or touched on, you taught yourself how to, did you say breathe fire?
Yeah, well, I started with fire eating. Now, in the sideshow world, it's very important if you want to learn dangerous acts, you really need to find someone that knows what they're doing. Once I moved, like while I was learning myself, did a lot of things that I was lucky to get away without hurting myself.
Yeah.
Fire eating and sword swung. Sword swung is a major one. These things can be life-threatening, they can be lethal, you can hurt yourself very badly. And I've seen it go wrong for many people. So I got very, very lucky. I never hurt myself. So no one out there go out and just start trying to eat fire.
Disclaimer. Right.
That's how I started. So... So I kind of self-taught a lot of stuff through trial and error. But once I was in New York City, the sideshow out there, the Coney Island Circus Sideshow, has a sideshow school where they give you the beginning basic building blocks of how to perform the stunts like fire eating, sword swallowing, walking on glass, straitjacket escape, bed of nails, electric chair, and just learning how to talk to an audience as well. And that's a good place to start to teach. I took that for a while. And then eventually I was one of the teachers there for about 2 years as well.
So in that regard, does someone ever start that school and like halfway through, you know, they're like, okay, well today we're, you know, we're walking on broken glass and they're starting the walkthrough and you're like, okay, this is not for me. I'm not, I'm not going to be able to make this. And you got to kick them out of the class or they fail or something like that.
Yeah, well, I've never kicked anybody out of sideshow school. It's funny. I remember like the times I was teaching there or co-teaching, there would always be about like 10 students. And it would be like five people that are just kind of bored and interested, like at least one or two like undercover like reporters or someone that's trying to write a story.
Yeah.
And then there's maybe one person that like really wants to try to do it for a living. And you never want to push anyone too far. Like one of the stunts, one of the very first things that we kind of teach is how to put a mousetrap on the tongue. And there's a lot of technique that goes along with it, but at some point you're just sitting there almost telling a person, just do it, just do it, just do it. And some people can get over that fear of doing it, and some people can't, and it's good to know. Yeah.
Now that we're talking about the school aspect and you're a teacher, did you ever have any students that it didn't go well and they got hurt? I mean, since you talked about
I had never had a student get hurt during sideshow school.
That's good.
And yeah. So knock on wood. I'm not sure what happened after they all left, but yeah. No, the school teaches you how to do the stunts in the safest way possible.
Tell us about performing on Coney Island. Are you still performing? And what was that like if you are not?
Coney Island was amazing. It was a trial by fire when I first got my job there, because I left Oklahoma to try to be a professional sideshow performer, which is probably one of the hardest things to actually set out to do. I'd given myself I'm gonna move to New York and I'd give myself 3 years to get on the stage in Coney Island. Within 4 months, I was hosting the show. They had one of their hosts leave right before the season started. And they really couldn't find anybody else to fill the spot. So it ended up with me. And I was way in over my head. Now, what the sideshow in Coney Island is a traditional grind show.
Okay.
So you have four performers. And between the four performers, they do about 10 acts. It's called a 10-in-1 sideshow. You pay one admission price, you get to see 10 acts. My job was to host the show. And the show opens around noon every day. And the show just keeps going back to back all day long until everyone leaves. So you can be coming in the middle of the show and you just stay until you see the next act. So I went from performing maybe once, twice a month, like at the deli or like, you know, at a like Rock and Bowl on Route 66 or VVD, something like that, to being in New York City, the crossroads of the world, in Coney Island, doing 6 to 10 shows a day. And it was a great opportunity because if you're developing an act or you're trying to get comfortable with something, if you mess up or if you fail, it doesn't really matter because in 40 minutes, you're doing the same act again. So you immediately get to correct the things that you messed up. You get to develop more stuff. And it's just, you just learn so much so fast. It was also the sideshow out there. Also, they host one of the longest running burlesque series in New York City. Like every Friday night is a burlesque show. My job there was to host the show. I was doing acts like hammering nails in my head, putting my hands in animal traps. I'd put a girl in the electric chair, turn it on, light torches off her fingers and her toes. We'd take a girl, we'd put her inside a box, fill it up with blades, charge the audience $1 to come down and look inside to see that she's still alive. I'd be working alongside fire eaters, sword swallowers, natural born oddities, such as Chuy Aceves, who was the wolf-faced boy from Mexico, working with the famous Matt Frazier, who's the seal boy with a ectrodactyly, with where his hands coming from his shoulders, tattooed women, snake charmers, and more. Now, what made it so interesting was it's a 10-in-1 grind show, as I said. So we're doing 10 acts back to back all day long. The show would open around noon, close around 7, 8, 9, 10, whenever the audience has stopped. And we'd be doing these acts back to back all day long. So you'd come in and you'd stay until you've seen the same act twice. Now, in this situation, you learn a lot because you're doing acts over and over. So yeah, so it's an amazing training ground to really hone your skills and learn new skills. Once I was in Coney Island, that's when I learned how to swallow swords from other sword swallowers of the time and learned skills there that have taken me coast to coast and around the world.
So these are pretty long hours then, as far as a day of work for you. You are working all day until middle of the night then.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was long hours, little pay and a whole lot of fun.
We still do our own grind show when we go to Australia, which is
pretty
cool.
Currently we've taken, once me and Frankie teamed up, we took the skills that we have and made our own side show that we've taken to Australia for the past 4 years together. Down there they have fringe festivals in Perth and Adelaide. And out in Perth, we ran our own grind show, just the two of us, where we would do, we do probably about 10 minutes of gathering a crowd. We get them inside, we give them a 20-minute show, we kick them out, and we do it over and over again. And it's a lot more rewarding when you're doing it all
just the team
for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those days could be like opening at 11 a.m. and going home at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Wow. And then getting up and doing it all again, or going somewhere else and doing it all again.
It's fun when you can do it. Yeah.
It's magic too, because down there they have all the big circus tents and a lot of them are really old and have a lot of history to them, which is super awesome.
That's really cool. And on the other side of that, I guess, if you're not performing a show, you're not being financially compensated. So, if you're not hustling, you're not making money. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we spend most our years now, we would spend about 3 months down in Australia doing the fringe festivals down there. We work for amusement parks for the September, October season for the Fright Fest season.
Flags.
We're doing a stage show out there, doing fire eating, chainsaw juggling, walking on glass, walking up ladders and machetes, all while dressed like zombies, which is kind of fun.
That's cool.
And then between that, we usually do a lot of corporate gigs as well, like private gigs. Oh,
okay.
So do you find that there is like a worldwide community, or is it all a little bit unique depending upon what part of the world that you go to?
No, there's sideshow performers all over the world, and it is a very small community. We've traveled, Frankie and I, we went to Ireland just about a couple years ago to do the street performing festival out there. We had never done a street performing show before, but we got the invite to do it. And we were like, we'll just take what we have and we'll give it a try. We might not be the best street performing act out there, but we'll have the best photos and photo ops for you. And we'll do all the media that you want. But we met performers there that we see. You run into people from around the world in the strangest places around the world. In New Orleans, I was walking down the street one day and there is a guy I knew from Australia just walking down the street as well. And we bump into each other and you see the same people over and over again, because the people that want to do strange and weird things for a living all kind of gravitate towards each other.
And do you guys pick up other, tricks or tips or things like that? Do you share information as far as the types of things that you're doing and pick up things for the show?
Well, sideshow performers can be very tight-lipped sometimes without like trying not to give away the shop or teach their own competition.
Everybody does their own thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Everybody
has their own style.
But there is shop talk between peers, and you can trade tips and ideas, or say you have an idea for a stunt but it just doesn't fit your persona or your style or what you do, you can give that to someone else. Like What Frankie and I do now is sideshow is a very big spectrum, and there can be very shocking and crazy,
bloody,
bizarro, like needles and body suspension, and like really trying to shock and freak people out. And then on the other side we're kind of on the other side where we're a little bit more.
The cartoon characters.
Yeah, we're like living cartoon characters.
The Disney of sideshow.
Yeah, the Disney of sideshow. The Ozzie and Harriet meets Jackass is the kind of that we head for.
Yeah.
I've always seen it as my job as hosting sideshows is to be the gateway to take people and introduce them to stranger and stranger and stranger things. So, yeah, I'm the first little weird taste. Me hammering a nail in my face. If you can handle that, well, let me introduce you to my friend over here who's
right
from the top of the head right down to the tips of the toes.
Is street performance a part of being a sideshow, or is it a branch or a different thing?
I mean, it's all entertainment, and street performers share a lot of the same skills as sideshow performers. Mainly the biggest one is just being a showman. It's a little harder on the street because you have to build your own audience and you ask for the money at the very end. Us, we're lucky mm-hmm. enough that we ask for most of the money up front, and then we charge you more to see more and more acts sometimes. Because okay. I charge people to see Frankie inside the box now. but street performers share a lot of the same skills, juggling, whip cracking, straitjacket escape, sword swallowing. All these skills you can see in a street show as well.
We'll be right back. If you want to support the show, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, and post a positive review. Can you tell us a little bit of the history of sideshow? When I think of sideshow, I think of, you know, kind of what you see in the old movies.
Yeah, I mean, the romantic version of sideshow does come to a lot of people from the movies and stuff they've seen in the past. Some of it is a little more derogatory, like Elephant Man shows like someone that's stuck in a sideshow that's being abused, as opposed to my favorite sideshow movie, which is Freaks, which is filled with famous real sideshow performers. I'm not the best at sideshow history, so I don't want to
the roots of it are several hundred years old, though, and it goes back to even Fakirism in India.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Barnum had the first more traditional American sideshow with his museum in New York City, where he had a 3-4-story museum where he would hire performers from around the world to come basically live and perform at the museum full time. And I think that's kind of where the American style sideshow really picked up. And then in Coney Island, there's a long history of sideshows and amusements down there. They would have like a little person village with their own fire department, and they would go and do.
Well, it was also displays. A huge part of touring circuses too.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Right.
I've always imagined them too as being sort of a pre-show to like a main circus show. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but sort of like on the way into the circus, you have this pre-show or you have a.
Yeah, they would have the Ringling Brothers would have a. Yeah,
there was a circus tent.
Mm-hmm.
There was the hooch tent.
Uh-huh.
The hoochie tent.
Where you'd see the girls dance the hoochie coochie.
The hoochie coochie.
Yeah.
The sideshow
tent.
And then like a blow off.
Mm hmm. And then you could take these shows and tour them around. There's also still sideshows going on today in a different vein, which are like singalos, where you go and you see one act.
Or
an oddity or a gaff or something like that. You'll see this at the state fairs nowadays. There's still a family that goes out and does it, and they have like a Spidora or Snakehead woman.
Or the Kentucky Redbacks.
Uh-huh. Or the world's largest.
Wait, what is that? What's the what'd you just say?
Kentucky what?
Yeah.
Well, you've heard about the 6-foot-tall man-eating chicken, right?
No. Now I have.
It'd be an oddity on the outside. You see these giant banners all painted up with like of a farmyard.
I know where you're going. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So see the 6 foot tall man eating chicken.
And then you go in there and he's eating a chicken.
And it's
a gotcha.
Tall man eating chicken.
Yeah. Sure.
I think that one might be actually more lore than actually pulled it off.
Since it sounds like you started in 2000s.
Yeah.
When...
Yeah, I guess it was 2003, 2004 is when I started Coney Island. And that's kind of where I
marked
my professional beginning of.
What is the evolution that you've experienced, Ben? Because, you know, you started Coney Island, let's say 2004, mm-hmm. and now you guys have acts shows on YouTube. I mean, in the beginning, I doubt you knew that that was the trajectory you were going to be taking.
I had no idea. Like social, like I so was focused on Sideshow. I was never very good at the social media part of it, which is absolutely necessary for any performing now. Over the years, Sideshow has exploded. Like, I used to be able to count the amount of sword swallowers, working sword swallowers in the world, like on one hand. And now that number is going up, up, up. It's still a very small number.
Yeah.
It might be two hands for people that are making a living at it. But it's strange. So there's a lot more performers out there, but people are coming at it. The good performers are coming at it with their own style and technique. For us, with the last year, things have been crazy for everybody, as we all know. So we've been trying to evolve what we're doing and adapt. We were asked to start doing some online shows recently, and we didn't want to just set up a camera in the living room and just go through our Sideshow acts.
Because it's change,
yeah, it doesn't, right. Because we really need that back and forth with performers. So because of that, we started up Follyland, which is our new show. That's our show on YouTube. It's follyland.com. We're taking traditional Sideshow stunts and we're mixing them almost like skits. Yeah, they're like 15-minute episodes, 15 to 20 minutes with acts that are like 3 or 4 minutes long. So we're trying to find ways to organically bring Sideshow stunts into little acts, and hopefully people enjoy it. We've been having a lot of fun like developing new stuff and taking old stuff we know and putting them in new ways. We took Frankie walking up a ladder with machetes and we turned that into an infomercial for a new kitchen product. Wanted to figure out how to do fire eating, so we have a great sketch where we're both devils in suburbia. We did a fun Halloween episode where we're just doing like Sideshow stunts as short little horror stories. So yeah, it's a fun new way to present our old Sideshow stunts.
Do you feel like, just as someone who's watched it, I feel like the production value on those is pretty high.
Well, that's
how'd you do that?
Frank. I mean, she is a perfectionist and it works out very well for us. Because I can play a little like sloppy and loose, be like, no, that one's fine. And then we'll spend like, no, we're gonna get this right. And then we'll spend a week trying to get 2 minutes worth of usable footage.
Okay, so it is that much time. Because the way they look, I'm like, they spend a lot of time making these really sharp. And so I feel like on the back end, a considerable amount of more time goes into the Follyland than just you guys doing what you guys were doing pre-COVID, right? Or no?
Yeah, like with the shows that we used to do, we had it pretty down because we had our show and the hardest part was basically booking it and getting there. It was the hardest part. But once we're there, the show is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make videos,
you have to come up with a new show basically every single time. You're like, okay, that's done, instead of doing your old acts like they're at the back of your hands.
Yeah. So you have
it's kind of like being a baby deer stumbling around a lot.
Mm-hmm. I've always found in Sideshow, from going from career to career in Sideshow, because worked at the Sideshow in Coney Island, went touring with burlesque shows, worked for Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium in Times Square out front, getting people to come inside and see their shows, working fringe festivals in Australia, working fairs and festivals in the US. You're always starting from scratch at some level to readapt what you know and trying to figure out how to make it work, because it's the same skills, but it's just finding that tweak that makes it accessible for the audience that you're in front of. And doing the videos is the hardest thing we've ever done, but the most rewarding, because we know everything we make is going to be there in its entirety.
Yeah.
Forever.
It'll be super cool. We're a little older looking at it.
And a lot of sideshow performances live, it does not translate on film. The experience you have with an audience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How has that been? Because in Follyland, you guys, I'm assuming, don't have an audience. And I would imagine as a performer, when you're in the moment, you're really feeding off that audience. Yeah. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's hard when your only audience are your cats. Which we managed to sneak into the videos as much as possible.
Or they sneak themselves.
But the thing is we've had enough stage time and enough audience experience that we can kind of feel what should be working. So we're not second guessing ourselves as much if we were just coming at it totally cold.
I also still find you super entertaining.
Yeah, she still cracks up at all my jokes, which is good. It's one of the reasons I married her.
So you have a little bit of an audience.
What do you guys see the next year looking like for you as performers?
We do not know. We finally got word that we will not be going out back to Australia for the fringe season, which is January, February, March. So we just don't
keep it going.
We don't know when we're going to be able to get back in front of audiences.
Yeah.
Like with sword swallowing and hammering nails in your nose and mm-hmm. like that type of stuff, just is not
too savory mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
So
yeah, who knows?
So we're not sure. We'll know. We'll find something. We want to try and keep Follyland growing, and maybe try to adapt that into the next incarnation of what we do on stage, or expand that into other performers. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Yeah, I just can't wait to get back out there and make people smile.
I know.
And make some money.
I know. We're gonna make some money again.
I feel like that would be hard as a performer in any genre, whether you're acting or sideshow. Mm-hmm. I feel like the performer gets quite a bit from the audience.
Yeah.
To
absolutely.
Keep pushing them to develop their craft. Mm-hmm. So that must be pretty hard right now across the board for anyone performing.
For sure.
But one of the rewarding things that we found is with our new videos that we're making is we've had fans from around the world reaching out to us and knowing that it's a different time. And the feedback we've gotten from our longtime fans and new fans has been great. And it's been very encouraging. So it's a good feedback. It's delayed gratification, which is I'm not the best with, but
How is it being in Oklahoma right now versus say if you're in Brooklyn or somewhere, like you guys basically have decided to make Oklahoma your home for now, so you're there doing the videos and everything.
We invested in a 1967 Airstream in the last couple years because we were doing another circus tour with another traditional sideshow. And we were stuck in a tour bus with five other guys, and it was cramped and it was sweaty. And we were like, we are just too old for this. So we bought ourselves, we took the cash that we had, and we invested in a really fun vintage trailer. And just the aesthetic of it and the feel of it is great. It's great to have something that's ours.
You can park it right behind a stage. Mm-hmm,
yeah, so we can drive this anywhere in the US, and we have our own dressing room. We have our own living space. Like, and we're ready to go at a moment's notice. So we have that in our backyard right now. And Oklahoma is more affordable. And
yeah,
yeah, I
we're also gone so much that it's mm-hmm. kind of silly to pay rent at a in a city that is very expensive.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is the longest I've ever been home in my life.
I know. This is the first winter.
Uh-huh. This will be my first winter in Oklahoma ever.
Yeah.
It'll my be... first real winter.
Yeah, we've been chasing the endless summer for the past, well, like I've been Australia for the October, for the winter for the past 7-8 years. So I haven't
that's their summer,
seen don't ice in a while.
I hope you're not disappointed, Frankie.
I'll build a snowman or something.
No, yeah. we've really reached out and found new friends and old friends here in Oklahoma. It's been fun to catch up with people we haven't seen in a very long time. And it's fun. It's growing on us. We wish we could actually get out and explore a bit more right now. But
I know it's on Zoom, but would you guys be able to show us any of your, I guess, act or sideshow at all? Would that work?
Let me get my
We are putting you on the spot.
I am putting you on the spot.
Here we go.
Can the cat, what's your cat's name, by the
way,
Frankie?
Loki Doki. And then we have another kitten.
Okay.
He's our big, squishy, black boulder.
Wow, yeah. That's a pretty big cat. Yeah, and I think the cats in the YouTube videos, that's a good play. You always get like 10 times more views if you have cats in videos. So
we had a one-eyed hedgehog once that we were going to shoot out of the cannon. Not really, but...
Oh. Okay.
It never happened, but it would have been great for YouTube.
All right, here's a fun little stunt for the age of COVID. A little stunt that involves two things, a hammer and a nail. I got my hammer.
Okay.
Got my nail. Now, if you look really close, you can actually see that there's a, see that dent right there in my forehead? You see that?
Yeah.
Here, watch this. I'll start right
now. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I tell you
okay, why. I was going to say, because I was kind of worried about you hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. Even
no, the nail does not go in the forehead. Oh, no. This solid steel nail, which is 6 inches long, is going to go in right up the nose. I start by taking a nail, point it towards the brain. I take the hammer, start tapping, driving it right back.
Yeah. And it's definitely going in. Yeah, it's a clear view.
You can see, this looks really good in the video right here. You can see that the nail is wedged between cartilage and bone. At this point, that nail does not want to go deeper into my face.
Okay.
Keep it to force it.
Force it.
I'm gonna force it. Yeah, here we go. Down and down it goes. Oh, that's the claw side. That'd be dangerous. Hold on. Here we go. Down and down it goes.
Oh wow, that went right in.
I know. So pretty brought a tear to my eye. That's how
Do you have an extra sinus passage right there?
What's that?
Do you have an extra sinus passage right there?
Oh no, like... it's the same passage that you breathe through. I've just taken mine, and you see how people have gauged out their ears where they have an earring and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger? Mm-hmm. I've basically done the same thing on the inside of my nose, where I've stretched out the inside that I can get larger and larger objects up inside it.
Amazing.
So, there's an old saying in the sideshow. This is what's known as the human blockhead. The stunt was made famous by a man named Melvin Burkhart, and he would always say that this right here is a hard way to make an easy living. I tell you right, hammering the nail in the face isn't the hard part. The hard part is getting people to pay you to do it. There you go. That's how it goes in. Here's how it comes out.
Nice and slow. Okay.
Oh no! Now it's on the floor. Here we go.
Oh, good.
Oh, God. I don't know, but that was the worst part for me.
Yeah.
Licking it clean? I can understand.
Licking the nail clean. Yeah.
My heart.
Yeah. First time she saw me do that.
See, now I think the only difference is in the age of COVID, you just have the mask on and you just drill it through the mask.
That's a good idea. Like now, I actually went and got a COVID test earlier in the season. And it's the same. If anyone's done it before, the nasal swab, if that's the same passage that I use to hammer nails into, it goes all the way to the back of the throat, and sometimes you can actually taste it in the back of the throat. And I was like, I was born for this. I am going to be the best COVID test taker there is. And I was doing the drive-through test, and the lady comes and she's ready to do the swab. She puts it in. I'm just staring at her, just trying to get some, like, wow, you did a great job at that. But
yeah,
it was anticlimactic. They're like, you did a good job.
It would have been great if they,
everybody, I was like,
if they put the Q-tip in and then it just disappeared, and then they, like, she just lost it.
I should put a nail in there first.
There you go.
And I'd be like, wait, let me get that for you.
Right.
So for listeners, where can they find Follyland?
Follyland.com, Follyland.com will take you directly to our YouTube page where we're putting all our videos up. If you want to see more of our sideshow stuff, strangeforhire.com is our other production page where we put a lot of our shows and information where you can get in contact with us. But,
and how often do you guys post on the YouTube for Follyland?
We were trying to get the Follyland episodes out every 5 to 6 weeks. And
okay.
we take the episodes, and each episode is 5 to 6 acts. And then we cut those up and then repost them every once in a while. But we have 3 full episodes up right now. The Halloween Spooktacular-rama, the devil bit in it is one of my proudest things that I've produced or made in a long time. I was very happy with it. But yeah, we're really enjoying making it. And we just want as many people to see it as possible.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it feels good to have
some
validation.
Well, you guys have done an amazing job on Follyland, and I hope you guys get many more subscribers, and also hope you guys can get back on the road soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see you live in person.
Yeah. We're ready to get back out there.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Bye.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
See ya.
That's a wrap on this episode, but if you'd like to find more about Frankie and Donnie, you can check them out on YouTube at Follyland. Also, you can find them on their website, strangeforhire.com. Subscribe to Scissortail Sessions on Apple Podcast. We would really appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating, and added bonus, leave us a positive review. Be sure to visit us on scissortailsessions.com. Until next time, thanks for listening. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, find us at scissortailsessions.com.